Today's guest is Teresa Leese, and Teresa and I share the same business coach. So we met actually in a Zoom room where we were getting some training together, and she's a coach and she knows breath work, and breath work is very fascinating to me, and I talk about it. I've had somebody on before who's a breath work facilitator, so we have talked about it in the past, but I always like everybody's different perspective. And she shares an interesting story about somebody that had an amazing result from a breathwork session. So I'll let you listen to that. But yes, Teresa talks about her backstory and how she ended up becoming a coach because she had a life before coaching. And she found coaching in her second half. And it was the result of a life pivot. And so she got divorced at mid-40s, 45, I think she said in the conversation. And that was a big thing because she had been married for a long time and she had children who were affected. So she talks about that pivot. And then she talks about, we talk a lot about breath work and how it changes you kind of physiologically and how it allows you to, maybe not every time you do it, but we just talked about how it's different than regular breathing. And it's just really fascinating. So if you've never done breath work, you should listen to this. And if you're curious, you should give Teresa a jingle. So with no further ado, let's talk to Teresa or listen to Teresa's story and hear about what she does as a breath work facilitator.
Hi, I'm Laurie Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place to go for midlife inspiration. If you are in a stage where you believe the best is behind you, it is my hope that one of these episodes will ignite a long suppressed or unrealized desire, and you will see the potential within yourself just waiting to be tapped so you can do amazing things with the time you have left. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that a younger you never had. So it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age hold you back from the pursuit of a more passion-filled life. The more passionate we are, the better the world will be. So stop settling for average, put your AirPods in, and let this episode inspire you to take the first step in transforming your mind, body, and soul.
Welcome to another episode of Not Your Average Lives. And today I have with me Teresa Leese. And Teresa is a life coach and a breathwork facilitator. So we're going to talk about her story. She had a big pivot in her late 40s, very similar to the period I had a pivot and very similar to my pivot as well. And then she's done a lot since then. And she's kind of in the realm I'm in as a coach. And she's loving it and lights her up. So she is living a not your average life in her second half. Perfect kind of guest that I look for. So welcome to the program, Teresa.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. And she was talking about her struggle with her glasses, and like, I can relate. Anybody who's listening can probably relate to that struggle. And my most recent exam, I mean, every year that my eyes keep getting worse. And the frustrating part is, like you were saying, your prescriptions are not working very well. Mine aren't either. And my contacts, which I wear, you know, for like stuff like this a lot, they're like, I can't even read when I'm on my computer now with my, and I was able to do that. So I feel like, I don't know if it's a computer that keeps make my eyes getting bad or if it's just age.
Something.
Or both. Yeah. So both. I can commiserate with you. So anyways, yes. Tell me about your pivot. Tell me about what happened in your life and how your life changed in your late 40s.
Yeah. Okay. So I was married for 20 years, met my husband at work and had, you know, a typical sort of beginning. And I thought everything was going really well. We have two children. And we moved around a lot. He works for the railroad. And so we got transferred regularly, like every 2 to 3 years.
And where did you meet? What?
We met in Chicago.
Okay.
And I was working for the railroad at the time. So that's where we met. And then from Chicago, we moved to McCook, Nebraska, and then Lincoln, Nebraska, and then Kansas City, Missouri, and then Colleyville, Texas, and then Andover, Minnesota, and then Chicago, Illinois, and then When we were in Chicago is when we separated, and I moved with my children back to Minnesota because I just felt that was the best place to raise them. We'd only been gone from there for one school year, and so I thought that would make the transition easiest for them. And I knew I didn't want to stay in the Chicago area. But basically what happened was, you know, I was unhappy for a lot of reasons. And, you know, as we do, talk to friends about it. And I finally had a friend who said, you know, this isn't just you being silly or overreacting. You know, you're involved with a narcissist and he will not change. And he is emotionally abusing you. And when someone's actually said those words to me, it shocked me because I thought, oh no, that can't be true. Like, I'm too aware and all of that, you know, him saying these negative things, that can't possibly be abuse. You know, it just didn't seem like that fit. And then I sort of started reading about it and I went into therapy and, you know, the therapist told me, you know, from everything you have described to me, he is a narcissist that will never change. Therapy will not work for him. So then I had a decision.
Did he ever go to therapy? Because usually I don't think a narcissist will go to therapy. Yeah.
No, he didn't. I was always the problem. The problem was always me. When we would discuss something or I would try to bring something up, you know, things happen in married life and you know, you need to work these things out. And I was usually very terrified to bring it up because I knew it was going to be a difficult conversation. Tended to have quite a temper at that time. So it was difficult, you know, and when I got done talking to him about this issue, he had managed to turn it all around and it was completely my fault and my problem. And I was just dismayed and disillusioned. So finally decided that things were starting to, he was starting to affect my children, our children.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say
negatively.
That. Yeah. Role model.
So, yeah. So things were not going well. And I just decided that it really wasn't safe emotionally for any of us. So I had to make the very difficult decision to get divorced. And of course, with all of these moves, all of these transfers we were constantly making, I didn't work. You know, he was the breadwinner and I was home with the kids because we were constantly moving, constantly changing schools, you know, all of that takes a lot of bandwidth.
Yeah. Like a military wife, really.
Right. Very,
very similar. Can't work or can't work in any kind of career, really.
Right. Yeah. So, I was dealing with some depression because of all of this.
Yeah. And when you're in that kind of situation too, you feel kind of trapped. You know, I had my own career when my ex-husband and I split, but it was still financially hard because we were a two-income family and we were used to living the life we lived. And I can't imagine where you didn't have your own income and you were reliant on your husband's. And that's enough to make people not even try to pursue divorce.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I was very lucky in that regard in that we actually used a mediator. So we ironed everything out, all of the terms before, and it wasn't like a court thing that went back and forth or anything like that. So that was really a blessing. And anybody who has the option to use a mediator, I strongly suggest it. It was very, very helpful to us.
Yeah. We used one for, you know, that when it came to dividing the furniture, because my ex-husband kept thinking everything, because we had a lot of nice furniture in our house. And he kept thinking that we could get the same amount of money or, you know, practically the same. And it was so funny. The mediator, I remember he said to us, he goes, you know, the stuff in your house, it's like, you know, you think it's valuable, but it's like used. It's not, it has no value to anyone until it becomes an antique. And I thought that was very, very interesting. It drops in price as soon as you take it out of the showroom, like cars used to. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's interesting too, because we did have several antique pieces and they were, you know, pieces that I had chosen and used for decorating in the house. And he knew that they were special to me. And so he would try to kind of go for those things. He'd say like, well, I want the Hoosier, I want the bookcase or whatever. And I'd say, fine. And I knew that he was just doing that to get a reaction. And as soon as I didn't have a reaction, he didn't want it anymore. You know,
yeah, interesting. So, well, good for you. Yeah. Mediators, hearing it from a third party is super helpful. And we had a guy who was a mediator. And so I think that also helped.
Yep. That could very well be. Yeah.
So how old were your kids in during this time?
Okay. So I turned 45 shortly after we got, when we separated. My daughter was turning 16 and my son was turning 12.
Okay.
So that was kind of nice because I was getting another driver to help me, you know, cause I knew I was going to have to work, but I also was in a great position where I didn't have to get work right away. So I worked a lot of, you know, short-term things, low paying things just to get me out of the house and get me working again. And, you know, it was just hard because when you haven't worked for that amount of time, you don't have a great resume, you know, so you're kind of starting at the bottom and not feeling emotionally strong or anything like that. So it's not easy, but it was still a relief from what I had been going through. But like I said, was dealing with some depression because of it, and was doing what I think most women do. You know, you look for help where you can find it. And I had found this person, Martha Beck, through Oprah Winfrey.
Yes, I remember Martha on Oprah.
Yeah. So she, I always loved the articles that she wrote. She always had an article in the O magazine and there was always humor involved with it. And I'm a huge humor fan. So I started reading more of her materials and found out that she had a program for life coaching, which I'd never even heard of before. And found out that that was, you know, actually a viable kind of career. So I did the training, in 2016 and 17. And then just kind of put it on the back burner because I had my pay the bills job was going on. So I didn't really spend any time building the business. I just practiced now and then.
So you were like, it was like night school in a way. It was kind of like going back to school, but doing the coaching thing at night. And
Right. Right. Very much so. And then later on, I found there was a Hay House Summit where it's one of those free things where, you know, for like 9 days in a row, they have all these fantastic speakers and you can watch it for free. So there was this one man on that was talking about breathwork, and the way he was talking about breathwork, I was like, oh my God, what is this thing that I have never heard of? And he kept saying, you know, it changed his life. He was an alcoholic. He was from Boston. The way they handled problems was just to hit each other, you know, and things like that. And he was now this peaceful sort of Zen sort of guy. And it was all due to breath work. And I thought, I got to find out more about this breath work thing. So I looked him up and he had a training program. So I took the training from him. His name is John Paul Crimi. So I got to give props to all of those people.
Yeah. I haven't heard of him. I'm going to have to look him up.
Yeah.
And so, how do you spell Crimi? Is it K with a K?
Or? It's C-R-I-M-I.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And John is J-O-N.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I took one of his trainings online and I did one training live with him in Calabasas, California. And fun fact, not a fun fact, very sad fact, the last day of our training there in Calabasas was the day that Kobe Bryant's helicopter went down in Calabasas. So right where we were is where all of this was going on. So that was very traumatic for a lot of the people who were there, because obviously a lot of them were from that area, and you know, it was a huge deal. So that was very sad. But anyway,
yeah, that wasn't that year and a half ago. How long ago was
it? It was 2019. I think it was either 2019 or 2020. I can't remember because the pandemic just screws up all of your memories.
It was probably before the pandemic because they were going to a game. Pandemic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Her basketball game. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
wow.
So then I got these two trainings and, I loved breath work. I mean, I love all of the tools that I've learned, but one of the reasons I love breath work so much is because it involves the body, and transformation happens more quickly when you're involving the entire body. As Americans, as Western culture people, we are so much in our heads all of the time. And in fact, I love this saying that the mind can be considered the future and the body, the past, and your breath is the present. which is so true, because your mind, you can dream the future. That's how you develop your future. You know, you have a vision for yourself and you make this beautiful vision and then you're drawn to it, or circumstances are drawn to you based on this beautiful vision. Our bodies are a result of all of the decisions we've made in the past, what we've decided to eat, how we've decided to move our body, how we've decided to rest our body. So our body is very much the past, and breath happens in the present. So, you know, anytime you see somebody on TV or in real life, you know, whatever, somebody's having a hard time, someone around them is almost automatically going to say, just slow down, take a breath, just breathe. And we don't realize that our bodies have this incredible tool that's built into us. We take over 20,000 breaths a day, all unconsciously. And another fun fact, breathing is the only essential body function that is absolutely automatic and also completely under our control when we choose.
So and it's also in meditations, it's a way they always get you back to the present. You know, they always like, you know,
right.
You know, focus on your breath. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. So great. Exactly. So breath work is when you're focusing on your breath, that's sort of a mindfulness practice. And breath work is more deep. It's definitely into your belly. So it's a deep and it's more got a rhythm to it. So I teach the particular kind that I teach is called conscious connected breathing. And it has so many benefits. It's incredible.
So let me ask you this. I had a call last night with my students and they're going to get a breathwork session with you. So I'm very excited about that. And so they both of them, the two that were on, had never had, they haven't, they're virgins when it comes to breathwork, which is exciting for me because I've had really great experiences with breathwork. But they were asking me to describe it, and I'm sure it's different for everyone. So I'd be curious what your description is, and as a facilitator, how you've seen people react. But for me, it's intense is how I describe it. That it's really, and I remember somebody said this to me once, breath work is work. It's not like this mindless breathing that you kind of do when you're, and I mean, it's intentional breathing when you meditate, but it's more physical in nature. But I have never gone to places in my unconscious mind using any other modality. You know, breath work to me, I have had breakthroughs in breath work that I never have gotten anywhere else.
Exactly.
So it's I don't know why I don't do it more often, because it's very valuable. And it's a lot of times very emotional for people. It's, you know, depending on, I'm curious, do you use music? As part of it. Yeah. It's like when the facilitator picks good music, it's like, oh my God, it's such an emotional release.
Yes.
So tell me what physiologically happens in the body that allows you to go to these places that you don't often visit.
Right. Well, what's happening is you're over oxygenating your blood. And that's just not a normal state. So you're changing the balance between the oxygen and carbon dioxide in your body. Your body is actually becoming more alkaline, which is how the body heals when it's in an alkaline state rather than an acidic state. So that's like one physiological change that is actually happening in your body. It also cuts out the chatter that you get in when you're trying to meditate, because it sort of cuts off the thinking brain, the neocortex. It lets that rest. It's changing your brain waves. So normally we're either in alpha or beta brain waves, and breathwork will take you down to the theta level often. And that's where you get these, you can have breakthroughs. Some people call them downloads. And it happens regularly. I mean, like all of a sudden you'll just like have an idea. It seems like it just popped in your mind. And also you might not have anything happen at all.
Yes,
and then
right.
next week you might have an idea, and you won't be necessarily relating that to the fact that you did breath work last week, but that's probably why, because you're clearing things out. You know, if you're going to remodel part of your house, you don't just start, you know, working on the room, you clear it out first. So that's kind of what breath work does. It clears the system very much so that there's room for new things to come in. even like the Veterans Administration has approved it for treatment for PTSD. Like that's how effective it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask you, you know, is it a good cancer treatment? Because I mean, it sounds a little woo because, you know, people think, oh, you need to go and get really serious meds for cancer. However, I have read that when cancer thrives on an acidic environment. So when you said it really makes the body more alkaline, I thought, wow, that could actually help with people who are dealing with cancer and they have a highly acidic environment and the cancer cells are like, yum, 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 you know? And I'm not saying it's the only thing you do, but what a great, I wonder if any programs actually encourage that.
You know, I haven't heard of any, not that I know of, but I mean, it's just such a great practice. I think everybody should be doing it at least once a week. You know, when I started, I did it 4 or 5 times a week and because I loved it so much. And also it releases trauma from your cells. So our exhale is how a lot of the toxins leave our body. Trauma, emotional things from our past are saved, stored in our physical body, in our cells, and the breath work clears that out. So you can have lots of physical reactions that go on during the actual practice. Some people get tetany, where your hands get tight like lobster claws. That's very common, especially in the beginning. It happened to me in the beginning and it doesn't happen to me anymore. It's also something that we can deal with. It subsides as soon as you stop the breathing pattern. And also it tends to happen more when people are pushing too much on the exhale. The exhale is supposed to just drop out of your body. So there's you know, ways that we can work with that. But yeah, it's just, when you get done, your body, like my body is just like, you're sort of buzzing with this energy. You've just been moving energy all throughout your body, which just doesn't happen very often. And, you know, just from sitting all day in front of computers and things like that, you know, our shoulders hunch and we're breathing just this real shallow breath into our chest. And when you breathe all the way deep into your belly, it changes everything. So,
yeah. What are some of the experiences you've had as a facilitator and kind of witnessing people?
Oh my gosh. Well, one of the things it's really great for is grief. So, you know, you can imagine. So one of my friends lost her spouse recently, and I did a breathwork session with her, and she talked to him during the session. Like she saw him, she had a conversation with him. And I know that, like you said, this sounds very woo, but these are the things that happen when brainwaves shift.
Yeah.
You know, when you get out of your thinking mind, all of these things are available to us. We're just not used to them in our Western culture. But that was a beautiful response. And of course, a lot of crying. Crying happens a lot because you're releasing this trauma. When I first did it, my legs were shaking so much. I could hardly control my legs. It was like they were all over the place. And so that led me to believe that, you know, maybe there was some trauma that happened to me as a child or something, you know, that I didn't remember, but my body, you know, there's that book, The Body Keeps the Score. And, you know, that's what's so beautiful about it. It's your body healing itself, you know, and that's what the body is made to do. So it's a great modality for that.
So interesting. Yeah. So you have moved now, right? So now you're in Texas. So when did you move from Minnesota back to Texas? And now you're a grandma.
Yes, I am. I actually moved to Texas 1 year ago yesterday.
Oh, congratulations.
Yes. And I'm a grandma to twins.
Yes.
So yeah, they are the new loves of my life, of course. And I just knew being in Minnesota, it was going to be hard to have a relationship with them where they would feel comfortable around me. And one of the big advantages of not being tied to anyone, I actually, you know, kind of made the conscious decision at a certain point, not that I really wasn't interested in another relationship after my marriage. When I was leaving, I thought that I probably would, you know, date or marry someone or something. But I just had this feeling like I wanted to see what I could do with my life, just me. So I took that risk and, you know, I packed up my house completely by myself, came down here, unpacked the place completely by myself. And yeah, now I'm, you know, 10, 15 minutes from my grandbabies, and it's working out very, very well.
Yeah. And I bet that is very empowering for somebody who was controlled by a narcissist for 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, it was hard to leave, I have to say, because I was friends in Minnesota for 17 years.
Yeah.
I mean, of all these other moves that I'd made, it was 2-3 years at the most. And you make friends in that amount of time. But in Minnesota, I was actually able to have roots, which I had had since childhood. So it was very difficult leaving all of those friends, and also very hard to make new friends when you move to a new place and you don't have your children anymore, because, you know, when you're moving with children, you're automatically getting them into schools and into after school activities and things like that. So you become friends with your kids' friends' parents. And then of course, that was still during the pandemic. So, you know, not as many activities going on. So
So the pandemic is hard to
meet. So I'm just working on rebuilding that, and, you know, have joined some groups and things like that to get myself out there.
Yeah. It's funny. My youngest daughter just turned 40. And so I was young when I had her, being 63. And so I just was down there visiting her, delivering 3 of her 4 kids back to her after they stayed with me. And she's gotten into tennis. So she's really active in tennis, and she's in this over 40 group because she was 39 and she could join if she was turning 40 that year. Right. Yeah. So she's really, this has opened up a hole, because she played competitive soccer. So she's kind of, you know, but she's been in this mom mode and raising kids. And so she's got this new group of friends, tennis friends. And I went to one of her matches with her when I was down there. It was kind of like mom's watching her kid play again. It was great. But it's her tennis friends are almost my age. You know, it was like I could relate to them. It was almost like there was a couple of women that were in their 50s, even though I'm a little older than them. But, so, you know, there was such a commonality. And it was so funny because, you get out there. Pickleball is a big thing.
I was just going to say, I'm sort of looking for a pickleball place. I've never played, but I know it's kind of like the hot thing right now. And I think it would be really fun.
Yeah. And when the grandkids were here, I took them to the pool. Mm-hmm. And which I never go to. We have a neighborhood pool, and we have the kind of pool in the olden days when I went to the pool, you there was a snack bar and you could eat around the pool. And then when my kids were little, there were all these rules and you couldn't eat at the pool, and, you know, it wasn't as much fun. Well, our pool, you can actually drink. You can get a like drink, a mixed drink. A lot of people have like the what are those called? The you know, the seltzer waters. But you get seltzer drinks. What are they called? White Claw. Yeah. But you can sit there on the edge of the pool with your kids. And so I learned when my grandkids were here, there's this whole group of people in the neighborhood that go up on Saturday while their kids swim and they sit there and drink and shoot the moon. And, you know, I'm like that. I'm in now, but I don't have kids. So that's what you can take the twins up to the pool and meet all the cool parents.
Yeah.
and grandparents. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
That's so cool. Yeah. So what does your daughter think about your coaching, and has she done breath work with you?
You know, she has not. I have not been able to convince her. But she's also obviously extremely busy. She has a very full job. So she travels a lot. And her husband, of course, works full time. So they actually have a full time nanny. So they're kind of at that level where they need that kind of support. And also with 2 babies, and they were 2.5 months premature. So, you know, lots of things like that. So,
Now how old are they? Are they about the same age as your anniversary? Are they like almost a year?
They will be a year on September 29th.
Okay. Yeah. So, well, it's great, I'm sure, for them to have you close by and to be supportive. My grandkids live 2 or 2 hours away, and the rest are like 8 hours away. So that's kind of a bummer, but, I try to see them and can be flexible. So that's great that you have that flexibility. I'm glad they didn't ask you to be their nanny. or maybe if they did, I'm glad you said no, because I know some women like to do that, but I think there's so much more we can offer the world. And I think you can still be a big presence in your grandkids' lives. Yeah.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah,
it's working out very well.
So, yeah. So one of the things I like to ask my guests is how do you exemplify a living a not your average life?
Well, I think everything I've said so far qualifies me for it's not an average life. I mean, I grew up on a farm in Nebraska. So, and the house that I grew up in, my dad was born in. So, you know, that was my history. And then, you know, here I come with moving all, you know, every couple of years. Like, that was completely unexpected that I would have that kind of thing going on in my life.
Interesting, though, is that you met your husband, your ex-husband in Chicago, and mm-hmm. then you had a stint back in Nebraska, right?
Yes.
So that's yeah. kind of crazy. But were yeah. you near your home? Did you, or was it a different part of the state?
Well, part of it, we were farther away and part of it, we were closer. So we lived in a small town in southwestern Nebraska for 3 years. And then we lived about an hour away from my parents in Lincoln, Nebraska. Mm-hmm. So that was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was when my daughter was an infant. So it worked out very well that we had a little grandparent time. And then when the kids got a little bit older and we lived here in Texas, we would spend like three and a half weeks up with my mom and dad on the farm. So it was a really nice break from the Texas heat in the summertime and gave them kind of that farm experience. And my parents were great. They got goats from a neighbor 1 year so that the kids could have goats around and play with them. We had a horse, they borrowed a horse. And so the kids could ride horses and, you know, it was really lovely.
Oh, your parents still alive?
They are. Yeah. My mom is 88 and my dad just turned 93.
And they're still in Nebraska?
They still live in that same old house.
That's amazing. Yeah. What would you say, since, you know, I like to have people who have lived experiences that can offer some sort of insight or maybe some nugget to people that are in a marriage where they're not happy and they know that, you know, they would be happier if they made different choices. But yet they perceive, because this is where I was, is that divorce was not an option. You know, I didn't want to go there. And I felt like, you know, it'd be such a failure. And I didn't have a narcissist ex-husband. I actually had a nice ex-husband. And yeah, I've heard the saying of when you get married, make sure that the person is going to be a great ex-husband. I don't think you go into marriage thinking that, but yeah. So I had one of those. But, you know, but yet, so it made it harder. I made it a harder decision. But I knew ultimately that I wouldn't be happy continuing. And I knew that I wanted something different in life. And so I love that you had a friend that helped you see, because I think sometimes when you're in a relationship like you described, you've been controlled and that emotional abuse. You just have this thing that you think it's you and it's not them. And it just becomes so much of who you are and you can't see another way. So what advice would you give to somebody when they're in a situation mm-hmm. and they feel like they value marriage mm-hmm. and they value, and they don't want their kids to be divorced kids. That was a big thing with me, even though my kids were adults. But I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want them to, you know, have a split family. Mm-hmm. But yet here they had a mom who was not happy and a dad who wasn't happy, you know, even though he thought he was, but he wasn't. So yeah, so they had these parents that weren't thriving and didn't have a great example of a relationship fortunately they both got amazing spouses that are very supportive of them and love them very much. So I'm glad of that. So what guidance or, you know, nuggets of wisdom can you share? What
made I would say that unfortunately, the only barometer we use for good marriage is length of time, which is a terrible barometer of success. And we do tend to look at the end of a marriage as a failure. And I think that is also a mistake. It's not a failure. And as someone said this recently, I can't remember who, but a better barometer of marriage is if both parties have the opportunity to continue to grow. So if you change your filter on your marriage to not, am I happy or am I sad or am I failing or, you know, whatever, but are we both still growing and supporting one another in that growth? Clearly that was not happening for me. And I didn't know that at the time, you know, but because I had never heard that before. It was very hard because I was Catholic. Catholics are especially, you know, I mean, I was very involved in Catholicism, and I actually made the decision that I was going to have to get divorced when I was sitting in church. And the reading was, you know, love is patient, love is kind, love is, you know, and I was sitting there and I was thinking, oh, I don't have any of those things. Like, my relationship was none of those things. So it was like, okay, I can be released from this because it isn't a loving, supportive relationship. And like I said, it was, I could see that spilling over on the kids. And it's sad that I didn't value myself enough to leave until it was affecting my children. But that's being a woman, right? We always put our children first, other people first, especially women in our generation. I think that that's certainly changing, and that's a good thing. But we were just molded in that cultural sacrifice everything for the sake of your marriage and your family. And it wasn't a good thing. So
yeah, it's funny you should say that. I just saw a video of Ben Affleck on social media explaining why he finally got sober. I didn't even really realize he was sober at this point. I know he just married J-Lo, and I know she doesn't drink. So I was like, how's that working out? But it was interesting because he said that he used to go to these AA meetings, and he would be sober for like a year or a year and a half. And he would be so like, you know, people would stand up and go, I'm so grateful. He's like, no, you're not, you know, you're miserable and you still want to drink. And, you know, because he was still in this place of denial and wanting a drink. And he said, everything changed. Cause the question was it hard for you to get sober? And he said, everything changed when one day I realized how I was affecting my kids. And he said, and it's been easy ever since. He said, I never have one second wanted a drink, but it's so funny because we say it's for women, but you know, clearly it changed his life. It changed his life. But it is interesting how we do that. And even when your kids are older, they're still being affected by a relationship that you're in that is bad, because you know, your kids, just like we want our kids to be happy, our kids want us to be happy.
Right.
And when we're not happy, it affects them, and we're not living our best life, it affects them. So congratulations and kudos to you for following your heart and doing what you needed to do. And I think, you know, you're just going to be a great role model for your grandkids too.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for being here, and we'll see you in breathwork session soon. And where can people find you? They'll be in the show notes, but can you just say where they can find you if they are interested in breath work and want to sign up?
Yeah. Well, I'm on Facebook just under my name, Teresa Lease. I'm on Instagram at Teresa True North, because my company is True North Authentic Life Coaching. So that's also my website, www.truenorthauthenticlifecoaching.com. You can find me in those places. And I would love to have all of you in a breath work session someday.
Awesome. Yeah. You might get to talk to somebody that has passed on, right?
You don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Not Your Average Lives podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you have an Apple device. You can find free resources and learn what else I have going on at the moment that might interest you on my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at Not Your Average Grandma. If you liked this episode, it would make my heart so happy if you could leave me a 5-star rating. You can also add a review to let me know what you like about this podcast, which will help spread the word about it to others who need a little midlife inspiration. As always, be you, listen to your inner voice, and focus on reigniting that lost spark so you can start living your own, not your average, life.